For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Mark McCloskey on fire on Newstalk STL.
I get no doubt.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey. Mark McCloskey on fire. News Talk STL 101.9, 94.1. You can catch me on X, formerly known as Twitter, on my Rumble feed on Facebook, any place you get your podcast. Well, you know, the world is going to hell in a handbasket, and everything that we hold near and dear is on the verge of destruction, at least from my perspective. We've got a war raging in the Middle East now, which is seeking to expand to be a global conflict. We've got the war in Ukraine, which is in a dire state of emergency right now. At least I understand that the some of the commanders are refusing to advance despite the orders of President Zelensky. And so I thought it'd be appropriate today to have an expert on military affairs, on international affairs, on intelligence, to kind of enlighten us today about what's going on first on the Middle East and then in Ukraine. So welcome to the program today, retired Colonel John Mills.
Hey, Mark, thank you so much. An honor to be on your show.
Well, thanks for being here. I mean, let me start off this way, just kind of on the things that people in the mainstream media don't typically talk about. In the war against Hamas right now in the Middle East, you've got, 2.2 million Palestinian citizens crammed into a little tiny strip of country, 4 or 5 miles long, wide by, 25 miles long, now besieged by Israel. And what most people don't realize is that the Palestinian population is kids, that 43.5% of the Palestinians are 14 or under. The median age for Palestinians is 18 years old. I mean, the adult population has been decimated, and the only business in Palestine is making more Palestinians. And that's kind of the scenario that's now being surrounded in Gaza City. Is that basically correct?
Well, yeah, and historically, I use the term Gaza. Palestine was a concept from a Yasser Arafat memo in 1964. Yasser Arafat was a Soviet agent. He was a creation of the Soviet Union, and the Soviets said, "Hey, we could, you know, Arabs and Israelis actually lived together for centuries peacefully," and this was part of their hate and discontent operation, was to create Yasser Arafat. Now, the Gaza Strip, it's essentially a UN entitlement and welfare state. What do you do in a situation like that? You just make babies. That's the challenge. And so Hamas is a terrorist group. It is a designated terrorist group, even by this incumbent in the elements incumbent in the White House right now. It's a terrorist group. They're thugs. They are. They work directly for Iran. Iran works for China. The WEF is all, and Klaus are all subordinate to China. China gave the green light. Now, the planning for this whole operation goes back. We, read the plans off of dead Hamas terrorists. This goes back well over a year. Iran was preparing for this. And who's to suffer for all this? Well, all those Gazans that are being used as human shields by Hamas. So Israel's going to – then Israel – this is not the IDF and Mossad that you and I grew up with here. These are not the battle-hardened veterans of the 60s, 70s, 80s. I mean, they've had 20 relative years of peace, so they got caught off guard. But they are going
to – We don't have any Moshadans over there these days.
Well, they're gone. Gone. And believe me, they are going to do a 20-year campaign to find and eliminate every member of Hamas. Hamas is a thug, horrible terrorist group. But they're going to handle this very methodically. Israel doesn't want to get involved in a forever war. We don't want to get involved in a forever war there. We've been providing ballistic missile defense for Israel for many years. That's going to continue. And we're already shooting down missiles from Yemen shot by Houthis, which are another proxy group of Iran. We're shooting those mid-course as they're over Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is helping us with some of this, too, shooting them down. This is crazy. But they're going to handle this very methodically. We're going to should provide them intelligence support, logistics support. I don't know how much 155 ammunition we can give them. We're low on that ourselves. Yeah. But the Israelis are going to, it's an information war. Phase zero was the planning going back over a year. Phase one was October 7th. Phase two is the information war, and the Hamas is going to make they're going to hold up every bloody body and say this is Israel's fault. Well, according to the laws of land warfare, you're not supposed to use civilians as human shields, which is what they're doing.
Yeah, well, so here's a problem from my perspective. That is, and I'm unabashedly a America first kind of guy, but you've got a situation now where you do have a civilian population which is subject to, you know, very serious consequences. I think there, when I looked at Al Jazeera this morning, there was something like 9,200 civilian casualties or civilian dead in Gaza, 3,500 of which are children. The Israelis, in their attempt to protect themselves against Hamas, have unfortunately unified the entire Islamic world against them and against the United States. And the more that, the Hamas terrorists can hold up dead bodies in front of the cameras, the more they've unified the Sunnis and the Shia together in a anti-Israel, anti-United States amalgam, which includes, you know, very powerful countries like Turkey and Iran, and then by proxy, the Soviet Union, or now Russia, and the Chinese communists.
Yeah, this is a challenge. Here's the proof in the pudding, though. Not a single Arab country will take one, using sometimes the term Palestinian, they will not take one Gazan, one West Banker, one. Why? Because I used to work with a lot of these Arab nations. They are actually very friendly to Israel in a lot of ways. They work. Their number one fear is Iran. China thought they were being clever and said, hey, we're going to cut a peace deal between Iran and Saudi Arabia like in March of this year. Mm-hmm. And the Biden regime has just been ugly to MBS and the ruling family in Saudi Arabia. And Saudi says, OK, fine, we'll cut it. We'll put Saudi Arabia first and see what kind of deal we get. But I said, this is never going to work out. And as time went on, the Saudi said, OK, well, this is not, there's no way China is going to make peace, and they're going to let them make nuclear weapons and not give us nuclear weapons. So now MBS started to come back the American direction. China says, OK, well, we can't let that happen. But the Jordanians, I mean, they're terrified of the Arab, angry Arab streak, but they will not take a single Palestinian, single Gazan, single West Banker, single Hezbollah, because they know it is a cancer. This is September 1970 all over again, when Jordan drove out all of, using the term of that time, Palestinians, because they knew it was a cancer that would topple the government. Mm-hmm. So they'll talk to this, but okay, if they're really concerned about this, but they will not, I guarantee it, they will not take in a single one of the Gazans. Which, so they'll talk the game, but they don't want them, and they know this is all contrived of China telling Iran, which told Hamas. So we got several hundred hostages. We got to figure out how to retrieve them. Some of them are Americans, and that's where, okay, we'll have a small footprint of our, commonly referred to as Delta Force, on the ground to retrieve. We have Americans being held against their will. But we got to handle this slowly, and the Israelis, believe me, they're going to try to figure out how to go into the tunnels, how to empty the tunnels without making this Anbar province all over again, what we experienced in Iraq.
Yeah. The thing that I heard recently, which was concerning to me, is that the Palestinians in the West Bank are upset with their government, not because of the casualties in Gaza, but because the government in the West Bank is not being more aggressive, not being more Hamas-like. And if there were an election in the West Bank today, that Hamas would win. And under that circumstances, you know, what are the options? What does Israel have? How can they extract themselves from this situation without, as I talked about earlier, unifying the entire Muslim world against them and requiring, you know, Muslim leaders like in Turkey to, for the sake of saving face and being the Sunni leader of the world, from taking action?
Yeah, there's a fractious nature among the Islamic and Arab states. Erdogan is a mortal danger to the Saudis. He's a Muslim Brotherhood. They are not friends. They are mortal enemies. This all goes back to Khashoggi. I am in no way advocating assassination or torture, in no way. But Khashoggi was who became a cause celeb with the blue side in America. Come on, he was an advocate for the Muslim Brotherhood and the overthrow of MBS and the House of Saud.
Yeah.
So what do you expect? I mean, come on. And Erdogan is very, watch this guy. I mean, I used to work with the Turkish officers. He rounded up, executed 20,000 to 30,000 officers, when the Bush team did nothing, when the military was going to overthrow Erdogan.
Yeah.
And wiped out several generations of officers, some of whom I knew. And
we were actually in Europe when that happened, and when that purge occurred. And I thought, you know, this could scale out of control in a big hurry. And yet he's managed to consolidate his power, and now he's quite a threat.
Yeah, he is. And a lot of it was in, just like what's going on in Panama, it's inaction of the U.S. government. If we had some resolve, some kind of clear statement of what we want, believe me, it has immense impact. But Bush did nothing and let the officers get slaughtered, because the officers assumed that America was going to stand beside them. And the Bush team, you guys are on your own. it was a bloodbath.
Yeah.
It was an absolute bloodbath. And Erdogan took over, and he wants to return, to a greater caliphate. And he is a mortal enemy of the Saudis. So how is this going to work out? I mean, the Egyptians were able to throw out the Muslim Brotherhood, but it was bloody. So it's very fractious. We got to retrieve the hostages. We got to kill off Hamas. We got to make sure we absolutely minimize any of the Gazan civilian casualties. So this is a hard challenge.
Yeah. Well, let me switch gears on you a little bit here and address the issue. The other war going on right now that we're engaged in is a surrogate force, that Ukraine versus Russia and Russia versus Ukraine. I saw a report that Ukrainian commanders are refusing to obey instructions to advance against Russian troops, saying that, A, they don't have the munitions, and even if they had the munitions, they didn't have the manpower to employ them. And I saw that the average age of the people in the Ukrainian army now is 43 years old. All of those things seem to be very, very frightening statistics.
Yeah, well, I mean, bottom line, Russia's out of gas, Ukraine's out of gas. I was always, from the fall of 21 before this conflict, give them enough resources to defend themselves, and that's it. But we must have judicious oversight, and we have failed to appoint an inspector general for Ukraine. As far as I'm concerned, we're done with resources for Ukraine at a bare minimum until we appoint an inspector general. Is extremely powerful, and they're badged, they're credentialed, they can make arrests. They put a lot of Americans in jail in Iraq and Afghanistan for malfeasance, and that's we cannot hand over resources with no oversight, period.
Yeah. And as you were mentioning about 155 millimeter artillery rounds, we've depleted our supply in support of Ukraine, and now what the heck are we going to do if we get in a shooting war?
Yeah. Well, this is our increase. Our defense spending is going up. But after 2 years of lecturing, we still have a military possessed by wokeness, and our industrial base, St. Louis, used to be one of the hearts of our industrial base.
Yeah.
You know, we cannot ideologically lecture the industrial base back into life. And our 155 production, they knew about this 2 years ago, and it was all depending on the Iowa ammo plant and then two ancient plants in the northeast of Pennsylvania, which had basically a finite throughput and way, way below what is needed. They're ramping up additional facilities in Ohio and Texas. But, you know, this is we do need to become the arsenal of democracy. The more we spend on this, the less likely we'll have cataclysmic war with China. Yeah. But we got to get an America First president back in office, because all they're doing is lecturing the industrial base. The money is way up, the authority's way up, and nothing's happened.
Yeah, and for my brief review of this, China's got about 2 million people in their standing army, another 510,000 in reserves. The Russians have got 1 million people under arms, another 2 million in reserve. We have, 450,000 in the standing army right now? And how many of those people are actually fully equipped and ready to deploy?
Yeah, that is questionable. And again, this regime, the Biden regime, gets, at first they ignored the wokeness thing. Then they made light of the wokeness thing. Now they're getting angry anytime anybody point. Well, the whole reason recruiting and retention are down is because people are pointing out wokeness. No, I think we should flip that. But they're so smart, they're stupid. No, the reason people aren't joining and the people don't want to stay is because the absolute abject craziness inside the military, with number one job of all the service chiefs, of the chairman of the SecDef, is build deterrence capacity, not lecture, not do social engineering. And yet they're angry that people are pointing out wokeness.
Yeah. Well, in the last 15 seconds here, I'm, of course, a big Donald J. Trump supporter. And other than, getting Donald J. Trump elected president again, short of that, is there anything we can do in 15 seconds? Let us know what we can do to fix this problem and project peace through strength again.
Well, we need to replace everybody in the military. It's the Missouri-Louisiana case is huge, and I'm actually a party to it because I was named as one of the people silenced and censored. You probably were too, Mark.
Oh yeah.
So that's going to be huge when that hits the Supreme Court in the spring, and I got a filing ready to go because my legal team has been ready. That's going to be huge, but we got to get America First. Secure your county. Make sure you have a clean county.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we unfortunately are out of time. I appreciate you being on the program. Hope to have you back soon. And hopefully your scenario works out and this does not become the World War III that everybody's talking about.
Amen. Thank you, Mark. I'm looking forward to being back on the show. Take care.
Thank you very much. You take care too, Colonel. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Colonel John Mills, an expert in Middle Eastern affairs, military intelligence and strategy. And we're very happy to have him on the show. When we come back in, we will talk about the Second Amendment. We'll talk about the state of the political world in this last week. And we'll be right back on News Talk STL.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewsTalkSTL.com. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up on News Talk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewsTalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire on News Talk STL.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey. Mark McCloskey on Fire, News Talk STL 101.9. 94.1. I'm on X, formerly known as Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Rumble, any place you normally get your podcasts. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we live in what is allegedly a free country, what was in the past actually a free country. One of the ways you can tell how unfree a country is how frequently the pundits that tell us about things tell us how free we are and how we're the freest country on earth. Well, one of the ways that you can maintain your freedom of individual liberty and our God-given rights is to be able to defend yourself against your own government if necessary. And that's what the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution was all about. Had nothing to do with hunting, had nothing to do with shooting Bambi wearing Kevlar, as the idiot Joe Biden always likes to say. It has to do with the ability of the people to arm themselves and to defend themselves against, guess what, an overreaching government if necessary. Just like the Japanese said during the Second World War, the reasons that you could never win an invasion of the United States is that there's a gun behind every blade of grass. And that's the truth in the United States today, But the other truth is that the government of the United States, through the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and through the swamp, are constantly trying to make inroads into your right and my right to defend ourselves, to own guns, and to own guns that are effective for that core purpose of the Second Amendment, and that is to protect our rights against an overreaching government. Well, the Supreme Court of the United States has taken up some interesting gun cases recently. The most recent decision was the Bruin case, where the United States Supreme Court overturned a New York statute that required individuals, in order to get a concealed carry license, to show unusual circumstances. For example, it wasn't enough to just say, hey, I'm a diamond merchant, I'm walking around New York City, and I might be subject to getting robbed or killed all the time, therefore I should have a permit. You have to, under the then existing law, you would have to show that you were somehow under some special risk, not just the general risk of being a diamond merchant or, you know, a guy that carries cash back and the bag man from 7-Eleven or whatever. You'd have to show some unusual circumstances. Well, the Supreme Court said that was unconstitutional. The Supreme Court created a new standard for determining what kinds of infringements into our Second Amendment rights would survive constitutional scrutiny. And that was basically saying that you have to be able to show some evidence that the laws that you wish to impose upon people to take their guns away from them or to restrict their rights to guns are consistent with precedent, consistent with historically existing conditions which would warrant such a behavior in the current world. And the Supreme Court decided that in the New York case that those requirements were not supported by any historical precedent, were inconsistent with the laws as they had been established at the time of the enactment of the Second Amendment or prior thereto. And so the debate then rages, because the powers that be, the people that wish to dominate us, to control us, to take away our individual liberties, the people that seek to create that single world socialist government, know that the only way they can do that is to take guns out of the hands of the average American citizen, because they know that the average American citizen won't give up their freedoms without a fight. And so they're constantly trying to impose new restrictions and find new ways to infringe upon our rights. Well, one of the ways they did this, and I call this the Newt Gingrich rule. Way back when Newt Gingrich was a Speaker of the United States House of Representatives, after a I'm trying to remember which event it was at the time, and my mind has gone blank on it at this point. But they decided that one of the things that would be useful to do would be to impose a restriction against people possessing firearms who had ever had a full order of protection entered against them. This is one of the first red flag laws, and that basically said that if you were under an order of protection, that you would threaten to or engaged in bodily violence against an intimate relationship, whatever the hell that means, that you would be prohibited from owning a weapon. I think that's 18 U.S.C. 922 parens G. Point 8. And that says that it's unlawful for any person under a full order of protection from possessing a firearm. Well, you know what happened when they passed that law? They found out that a lot of cops had domestic dispute orders entered against them, and therefore they were immediately illegal for them to carry their service weapon. So they had to go back and modify that a little bit. But once again, think about this. And these same red flag laws show up all the time. They're being imposed in state after state. For example, Michigan just initiated some really restrictive red flag laws on that regard. And that is that if anybody wants to report you as potentially a danger to yourself and others and have your weapons taken away from you, they get to do it. And it's not a police department, it's not a law enforcement official, your girlfriend, your wife, somebody that wanted to but did not date you in college 30 years ago can fit the qualifications of an intimate relationship where they have the right to basically rat you out to the government and say you should not be allowed to have a gun. And then the government comes in and takes your weapons, okay? And then you have to fight to get them back. Once again, guilty until proven innocent, or as we always like to say around here, guilty until proven Democrat. But the Supreme Court's going to take up a new Second Amendment case next Tuesday, and that's U.S. versus Rahimi. And Rahimi is a guy from Texas who got into some kind of legal trouble, and as a result, they searched his house, and they found some weapons. And so then they also discovered that he had an order of protection against him by his girlfriend or ex-wife or some such, quote, intimate relationship person. And so they arrested him on it. And that went up, I think, to the Court of Appeals and maybe all the way up to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And they found him guilty. Well, then the United States Supreme Court came out with a Barron's decision, or Bruin's decision, rather. And the courts down there in Texas reversed themselves and reversed his convictions. Well, you know, the United States government, being the wonderful and blessed entity that it is, decided that rather than just allowing this poor son of a gun to go free, they would appeal that to the Supreme Court, which they've done. And that's U.S. versus Rahimi. It's coming up next Tuesday to decide whether or not the prohibition against people having a order of protection against them, prohibiting them from carrying weapons or owning weapons, whether or not that's constitutional. And I suspect we're going to find out that there's absolutely no historical precedent for that. I don't even think the government's arguing now in the next Tuesday. I don't think the government's position is going to be that there is some kind of historical precedent for this. I don't think the government's position is going to be that they have a right to impose these restrictions because similar restrictions existed at the time of the independence of the United States or in ye olde England or under the common law as it existed in 1789. I think they're going to take the position that we get to do that because it just makes sense and it makes us all safer, because that's always our argument, right? The way to make us all safer is to take away our ability to defend ourselves. You have to work in D.C., you have to be an elected representative of the people. You have to be a judge in a blue state to believe that by taking away your guns, you make people safer. But that's always their argument. And anytime there's a mass shooting meaning four or more people killed at the same time, that's always their argument that we have to take away people's guns. And it always has to be long guns, specifically assault weapons, which they cannot describe or define, but they always call it assault weapons. And then they always try to expand it and find a way to have, once again, this historical precedent. So the Supreme Court has agreed this week to hear a case next spring, which is Garland, as in Merrick Garland, our illustrious Attorney General of the United States, versus Cargill. And it's a bump stock case, right? You all might be remember that back when that guy in Las Vegas shot a whole bunch of people out of his hotel window, think he probably killed 50-some people, wounded 500-some people, that he had a variety of semi-automatic weapons with him. And for those of you out there who are not in the gun business or know anything about firearms, there are two kinds of self-loading weapons, one called semi-automatic guns, which every time you pull the trigger, puts off one shot and then reloads the next lot in the next round, which will not fire until you pull the trigger again. Those are semi-automatic weapons. Then there are things called fully automatic weapons, which are also called machine guns. Machine guns have been illegal for the average person in this country since the 1930s, although everybody has a right to own one. You just have to buy a special license and be subject to federal scrutiny and all that kind of stuff. But a bump stock is a device which you can attach to a semi-automatic weapon, which by virtue of the recoil of the rifle will cause it to continue to fire. Every time that you pull the trigger, the gun moves back and forth in such a way that the trigger is released and pulled again. So in the real world, it's just semi-automatic fire. You have to pull the trigger every time you wish to fire a round. You can't pull the trigger in and have the gun fire continuously. Well, back after that event in Las Vegas, and by the way, this was my buddy Donald Trump, one of those rare occasions when I differ with him, one of those occasions where my wife, who thinks that Donald Trump's her son and could do no wrong, even she might give him a wee bit of criticism on this one. He issued an executive order, which was then adopted by ATF, calling bump stocks illegal because, in their opinion, it made them machine guns and therefore illegal. Well, anyway, so the Supreme Court's going to take up next spring the idea of whether or not bump stocks turn semi-automatic weapons into machine guns and thereby make felons out of, I think, 950,000 bump stocks were sold between the time that they were developed and the time that the ATF ruled that they were illegal. Well, you know, this is what the Second Amendment says. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Shall is a command word. Thou shall not. Infringe means take away or reduce. And keep and bear arms, that's two different ideas. To keep arms is to possess them. To bear them is to keep them on your body. And the reason why those both of those provisions are put in there is, one, each and every one of us has a God-given right to defend ourselves, and that means we've got a right to keep weapons. And we have a right to bear weapons because the only time those weapons are going to do us any good is when we're out and about and people might cause us harm. The time, particularly in the city where I live in St. Louis, when you're most likely to get shot by somebody is when you're on the street. And that's when you need to have the right to bear arms. And then you think about those states, Michigan, for example, most recently, that requires that if you're going to have a gun, you got to keep it unloaded and locked, right? Let's say burglars kicks in your front door, storms into your bedroom, you and your wife are there in bed, and now you've got seconds to defend yourself, to either kill or be killed, and you've got your unloaded pistol locked in a gun safe in the closet. What's your likelihood of being able to defend yourself under those circumstances? Having an unloaded gun locked in a safe is as useful as having a bowling ball in your closet. You're not going to be able to defend yourself with it in a meaningful fashion. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, never be confused. The only reason for any infringements on our God-given Second Amendment rights is to disarm the population, to maintain a monopoly of coercive power in the hands of the central government, to keep the American people pacified, to keep them from defending themselves, so that we can all be marched quietly and cooperatively into that single world socialist government, that great reset where we will own nothing, including our human rights, and be happy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, ain't going to happen around here. Ain't going to happen in my house, and I hope it doesn't happen at yours. I'll be right back, and we'll talk more about what's going on in this country and in politics this week.
Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewsTalkSTL.com. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on News Talk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewsTalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on News Talk STL.
Well, so we're going to take a look at this week in review. And I'm, you know, in due deference to Colonel Mills and his optimism about what may or may not happen in the Middle East, as I always say, I'm a make America great again, America first kind of guy. And I got news for the entire world. Until Arab terrorism starts killing more than 107,000 Americans a year, I still consider our southern border to be the thing that's important in America right now. I still think that when you have 107,000 people a year, twice as many people as died in the entire Vietnam War, dying every year from opioids, the vast majority of which come through the southern border, the vast majority of which are intentionally manufactured and distributed to the drug cartels by the Chinese Communist Party, then everything else pales in comparison to the emergency we have, the invasion we have going on, the crisis we have on our southern border, which is being absolutely ignored by our federal government, by the rhinos in Congress, and even by the border state governors. And as much as you might like Greg Abbott, for example, in Texas, there's nothing going on in Texas. I mean, you don't see the National Guard down there arresting people, forming a border security quadrant. You just challenging the federal government, for example, saying that, no, this is our state. We've got a right to defend it. Governor Abbott's declared an invasion, which authorizes him under the United States Constitution, Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution and the Texas Constitution to defend Texas and the United States against invasion. Is he employing all the forces available under his jurisdiction to do that? I don't think so. You know, folks running for governor of the state of Missouri like Bill Igel, I asked him flat out when he was on this program a couple of weeks ago, if you're elected governor, are you going to declare an invasion and deploy the National Guard to protect the sovereignty of the United States? And he said he would. And ladies and gentlemen, if he in fact would do that, that by itself would be the criteria to elect him governor of this state, because nobody else out there is going to do it. So let's talk about this war in the Middle East. Let's talk about what they call the Israel-Hamas war. Well, it's not an Israel-Hamas war. That war ended on, November or October the 7th with the invasion by some Hamas forces into Israel, resulting in the horrific death of 1,500 or so Israeli men, women, and children. But what has the response been? The response has been, in my humble opinion, completely out of proportion. As of the last time I tuned into Al Jazeera, something like 9,200 civilian deaths in Gaza, something like 3,500 of them children, blown to pieces by indiscriminate bombing. Of course, the propaganda on Israel's side says these are all just targeted attacks on Hamas. The propaganda on the Gazan side says these are indiscriminate bombings by the Israelis. The propaganda by all the conservative, I'm talking conservative, allegedly, news sources in the United States, specifically Fox and Newsmax, is such one-sided propaganda that you can't believe a word of it that you hear. And so here's the problem from my perspective. When you've got a war raging in the Middle East, where you've unified the Islamic countries of the world, which otherwise would be at each other's throats, unified them against Israel, unified them against the United States, to where we now are facing a wider conflict, where you've got the Shia Muslims in Iran willing to team up with the Sunni Muslims in Turkey. And we're talking 90 million people in Turkey, about 90 million people in Iran, both of which have sophisticated military capacity. Turkey, for example, has got the same submarines that Israel has. They're German-manufactured diesel-electric submarines. They're the exact same submarines that Israel has. Turkey's got 100 warships. Turkey's got, can put in about a month, 2 million people under arms. They've got a standing army of over 600,000. And if you think that the United States military is a military we had during the Vietnam War, if you think the United States military is even the military we had during the Gulf War, we sent 500,000 soldiers into Kuwait in a period of weeks for the Gulf War. We don't have a total of 500,000 soldiers in the United States Army. Now, we've got 452,000 people in the standing army, most of which are not combat ready, most of which cannot be physically fit to pass the most basic combat tests. And now we're going to take on, well, I did this last week, but I'll do it again. Turkey, 425,000 active soldiers, 380 in reserve. I understand that they can call up 2 million reservists if they need to. Iran, 610,000 active duty army, 350,000 reserves. Russia, 1,100,000 in their standing army, 2 million in the reserves. China, 2 million in their standing army, another 500,000 in reserve. United States has what? 452 politically correct, woke, semi-soldiers that are going to what? Go to war against the entire Islamic world, by the way, backed up by Russia and China. And by the way, the thing that nobody talks about is that what happens when Israel gets pushed against the wall? What happens when our ally realizes that the United States really cannot project the kind of power that we used to be able to project, and we cannot protect them? What does Israel have that nobody else in the Middle East has? hundreds of nuclear weapons so that they can deliver by short-term missiles, intermediate-range missiles, even ICBMs. They can strike targets anywhere in the Middle East. And guess what that's going to provoke? The Pakistanis have already told the Turks that if push comes to shove, Pakistan will supply the Turks with nuclear weapons. Think about how much fun that's going to be with Israel launching nukes. See, 12-hour march from Turkey to northern Israel through Syria. What happens when the Turkish army gets on the move and starts marching down to Israel? Is Israel going to commit suicide, or is it going to start lobbing nukes up in the Syrian desert at Turkish troops? What happens when the Iranians come on board? Are the Israelis going to commit suicide, or are they going to start launching nukes over to the state of Iran? What happens when all the Sunni and Shia Muslims unite against Israel and against the United States, and we start getting into a serious armed conflect? And guess what? We've depleted our war supplies in support of Ukraine on the basis of saying that we're going to be preserving democracy against unprovoked invasion. Well, the Ukraine's as much a democracy as the Soviet Union was, is just as big a democracy as Venezuela is now. It's run by corrupt oligarchs that are completely unaccountable to their own people, completely unaccountable to us, and hundreds of billions of dollars that we've sent to Ukraine with absolutely no accounting. Sure, have an inspector general, but it's a little late now after we spent billions and billions and billions of dollars to what? Protect the borders of Ukraine while our borders are empty. This is absolutely complete nonsense. And yet, our government is jumping on board. I mean, Biden wants another, $106 billion to spend mostly on Ukraine, with what, $14 billion of it directed to protecting the United States? Does this make sense to spend, what, $60 billion on Ukraine and $14 billion to defend our own borders? Well, it's just the entirely upside-down world that's been this way ever since Trump lost the last election, according to them, was stolen from us, according to the rest of us. But what do we got now? We got a judge in New York State saying that Mar-a-Lago, Trump's resort in Palm Beach, Florida, is only worth $18 million, all right? $18 million. I'd buy that today if you could really buy Mar-a-Lago for $18 million. It is complete BS. You got John Eastman's lawyer, John Eastman's Trump's lawyer, who was there on January 6th, who's been on trial since June for his law license out in California, because now having adverse political opinions, and I can tell you from personal experience because my wife and I suffered the same thing under the Missouri Bar Association, in California, John Eastman has been fighting for his law license since last June because he did what he really believed he was supposed to do, and that is write some memos saying what are the options of Mike Pence and Donald Trump and faced with a completely stolen and fraudulent election. Well, it gets worse than that. A friend of ours, Todd Rokita, who is the attorney general in Indiana, he had his license sanctioned because in a lawsuit against an abortionist in Indiana, he had the nerve to call somebody who is an advocate for abortion an advocate of abortion. And the Bar Association in Indiana said that that was inappropriate, and they sanctioned his bar license against it. Ladies and gentlemen, we live in a country right now where honesty is illegal. The truth is a violation of the law, and you stand up for your freedom, you stand up for your rights, and you go to prison, sometimes for decades. Just talk to anybody who is on January 6th, 2021, and you see what kind of a country we live in. But ladies and gentlemen, we live in a police state now, and if we don't do something about it right stinking now, we will never get it back.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com.